I'm author Kat Clayton, and my curiosity quills the crime. In the spring of 2020, when the COVID-19 pandemic hit, I thought about different ways I could show gratitude to my readers. Should I write a new book in my series? Two books? Should I give away a novella or post a weekly serial story on my website? Well, I ended up writing the fourth book in my series, but I still needed a gift for my readers. I needed the idea to be different and innovative. I wanted it to be free, fun, and a way for listeners to pass the hours curled up in a comfy spot, sipping a warm beverage during such an unparalleled and difficult time. This podcast is the result of my efforts. Without further ado, here is my gift to you, dear readers. Get cozy and let me tell you a few stories. Welcome back to Kat Clayton Mysteries. We will pick up where we left off on How Talisha Thief, a Steely and Cuff Mystery, Book 1, Chapter 4. We'd finished up the morning schedule a tad after 11. When Daniel came up front, I asked him if he had used the phone before I had arrived this morning. He said he had called his younger brother to wish him a happy birthday. So, the rude young man I'd spoken with earlier was Daniel's 14-year-old brother. My hopes of the phone call leading to a suspect deflated. We left Cuff cuddled up on his bed on top of my desk. Shopping was not his thing. Daniel and I ran across the street to the Bank of Buckleville. Standing in line, Daniel gabbed about how the township was trying to shut down the local tattoo parlor and no place like Ohm. Who doesn't love yoga and getting your zen on? Nobody says you have to be new age to breathe and stretch. And I bet every one of these cowgirls is inked in places where the sun doesn't shine. Daniel gestured over to the desk in the corner. I hear Kit Fisher over there in the loan department has barbed wire tattooed around her hoo-ha. He let out a throaty chuckle. Hello, it's hilarious. Why are you not laughing? He asked me. Ha-ha. Well, you're being a real stick in the mud, Steely. My mind redirected to the front door when it whooshed open. A well-dressed man in his 30s strolled inside, very George Strait-looking. I caught hints of dark hair from under his 10-gallon hat, his skin a rich tan. Well, who is this tall, dark, and handsome? Daniel panted. Come on, lover boy, it's our turn. I deposited 4 checks into the Scrub-a-Dub account and withdrew $50 from my personal checking. As we passed by the handsome stranger, Daniel elbowed me and whispered, Ooh la la. He whistled softly, practically drooling on the floor. Why can't I meet a man like that? Oh, he's too cowboyish for you. Daniel scoffed. What? I dig cowboys. I laughed and dragged him outside, the overpowering July heat threatening to roast us right there on the sidewalk. Something out of the corner of my eye caught my attention. I peered across the street at the Baker Building complex. Mr. Peters and a disheveled, gray-haired man were arguing. Mr. Peters' arms were flailing, and the other guy's arms hung limp at his sides. As if they sensed my eyes on them, they turned, glancing in my direction. Mr. Peters turned and stormed away. The gray-haired man wore something bulky strapped across the front of his chest. I squinted, trying to get a better look, but he spun around and hurtled down the sidewalk. Wait! I called after him as he took off at a full sprint. Before I could even think of chasing him, he'd vanished between 2 buildings. Who was Mr. Peters talking to? Daniel asked. I don't have a clue, but their exchange didn't look very friendly. I really wish I'd gotten a chance to talk to the man before he had taken off. Daniel fanned himself with his hand. Girl, it is hot as a well digger's butt out here. Let's go get our shopping thing on. I followed in Daniel's wake. According to the bank LED sign, the balmy, humid temperature had already reached 93 degrees, and it wasn't even the hottest part of the day yet. Daniel and I passed by Orsak's Cafe, and my skin tingled with anxiety. I got the sneaking suspicion somebody was watching us. Peering inside, I discovered the reason. Officer Jackson. He sat at one of the high top tables for two near the front window, dressed in off-duty street clothes, a white t-shirt and faded blue jeans. A baseball cap rested upturned on the table in front of him. He gave me a little two-finger salute. I rolled my eyes. Calling Nick last night after I begged him not to was one crappy move. It was as if he'd done it to be a jerk. I refrained from flipping him the bird. "What's his deal?" Daniel asked, noticing the oogling behind the glass. "And why is he staring at you like that?" "Just ignore him." I strode down the sidewalk, heading towards B's boutique. "Wait," Daniel hollered. I paused, turning back to find him pressing his butt against the cafe window. "Take a picture, it lasts longer," he said, whirling around and blowing a kiss to Jackson. Boy, were we a pair. "Don't antagonize him, Daniel. You wouldn't even know what to do if he came out here anyway." "Speak for yourself, sister. Too bad there isn't a gay bone in that man's body." Daniel covered his mouth and giggled. "I said bone." "Let's go," I said, dragging him away. Even when we were out of the officer's view, the disturbing sensation of being watched remained. I glanced around, but all seemed normal. He and Officer Tripp caught me in Gertie's old apartment last night after Samson's murder. "I told you to call me the next time you went snooping." "I wasn't snooping. I was observing. There's a difference. Besides, it was late." Daniel's jazz hands fluttered toward the heavens. "Well, don't keep a man in suspense. What happened?" "Nothing, except the jerk Jackson convinced Tripp to turn me in, and they called Nick." "OMG, was he absolutely furious with you?" "The details, please," his sky blue eyes begged me. "Yes, and I'd like to forget the whole thing happened. Can we stop talking about it?" "Well, I can take care of Jackson. Looks like he has a serious chip on his shoulder. He could use a good spanking," he smirked. "I don't care what the rest of the town snob said. I adore Daniel. Come on, Tiger, let's go shopping." It was too early in the day for him to get all worked up about spanking some guy. Besides, we had work to do this afternoon, and I needed him focused. And shopping helped him focus. As I entered B's, I paused and scanned the street and the sidewalk. I still had a creepy feeling that someone was watching us. I shivered at the thought, but I saw nothing out of the ordinary. No suspicious activity and nobody lurking. I ducked into the boutique and headed for the rack of discounted handbags. After blowing an easy $50 on one fabulous pair of blingy wedge flip-flops and a sexy magenta tank top, I felt much better. I also picked up a small lipstick red clutch for $6 on clearance. Nothing beats a good clothing and accessory sale. Daniel scored a butter-yellow pair of loafers and one UPS business card with a note on the back saying, "Call me." The phone was ringing when we arrived back at the shop. On top of the counter, Cuff bounced up with each shrill bark while trying to attack the phone. I rushed up to the counter, and when he saw me, he sprung into my arms.
"Oh, the ringing hurts my ears, Chiquita."
Wincing from Cuff's yaps, Daniel answered the phone. "Afternoon, scrub-a-dub." I set Cuff down on the lobby floor. At the same instant, I heard shouting from outside and, what was unmistakably, a gunshot. Without thinking, I flew out the front door, stopping short of the curb. Cuff, who'd followed me out, yipped at my feet.
"Chiquita, look, in front of the bank!"
Across the street, a man dressed in all dark clothing, a black cowboy hat and a red bandana, dark sunglasses covering his face, skidded around the front of a gunmetal gray Ford F-350 dually. The man looked in my direction and raised a pistol, pointing it straight at me. Tunnel vision took over, and my eyes fixated on the black hole of the barrel. Everything else around the gunman blurred into the background. As my blood pulsed in my veins and my heart pounded, the black hole in front of me grew to the size of a dinner plate. Time seemed to stop. My limbs froze, and dread washed over me.
"Steely, get down!"
I heard someone scream, the voice sounding impossibly like my mama's. Before I knew what was happening, a deafening boom echoed in the street, and the huge black hole seemed to explode in slow motion, and then a zing-ping-ping. Instinct took over, and I hit the concrete hard, my already busted knees screaming in pain. With his teeth, Cuff tugged on my shirt.
Chiquita!
Stars filled my peripheral vision. I think I've been... I mumbled, and then darkness enveloped me. Someone shot the sun out of the sky.
Steely? Steely, wake up! Are you hurt?
I opened my eyes to find a wide-eyed Daniel hovering above me and Cuff licking my face.
Oh my God, where are you shot? Where?
Daniel asked in a squeaky voice. My knees, I said in a hoarse whisper. Daniel patted gently, inspecting each of my legs.
Yeah, they're a mess, but I think they're only scratched, probably from when you hit the ground.
Can you sit up? He helped me sit slowly. My brain hurt and my vision blurred. I was on the phone when, oh my gosh, when I heard gunshots and then I thought you were dead when I came out here. You were so still.
Daniel grabbed me, pulling me into a quick bear hug.
The bullet hit the window. You are okay, Chiquita.
Cuff hopped up, putting his front two paws on my chest and planted puppy kisses on my chin. I winced from the pain in my knees. What happened?
The bad guy is gone. I barked him away.
Thanks, Cuff. I kissed the top of his furry head. Besides the sound of gunfire and the vision of the black hole of the barrel, I couldn't recall many details.
You don't mention it, Chiquita.
And he planted more kisses on my face. All right, enough smooching, you two. I think someone just robbed the bank, Daniel said. The shop's portable phone rang in his hand. He answered it on the second ring. Yes, she's right here, he said, handing me the phone. He whispered, It's Nick. All right, play it cool. Yes, you almost died, but don't panic, I thought. Hey there, I said into the phone. I nodded to Daniel as Mr. Peters and his monster-sized black standard poodle Maisie charged across the street. Daniel carefully helped me up. I wobbled and clutched the phone to my ear.
Steely, someone just robbed the bank. Lock the shop doors.
Nick's voice came from across the phone. My legs threatened to give out. Yeah, we know, I said.
I'm headed into town. I'll be there soon.
He disconnected without another word. Sirens blared in the distance as Daniel, Cuff, and I made our way into the shop. Mr. Peters and Maisie followed us in. He dropped her lead and Maisie sat obediently beside him.
Everyone okay in here?
Mr. Peters asked, his eyes bouncing from me to Daniel to the street and back. He lifted his shotgun Patrice's strap and hoisted it over his head.
I heard gunfire.
We're fine, but we think someone tried robbing the bank. Daniel motioned for me to sit into one of the lobby chairs and got to work cleaning up my knees. I peeked at the damage. The right one had an ugly gash caked with sand and gravel. The left one had a slight bruise and some minor road rash. He rinsed them both clean and patted them dry. He blew on both as he unwrapped the bandages. Carefully, he taped a rubber ducky band-aid on each knee. All better, he said. Thank you, friend, I said to Daniel and glanced over at Mr. Peters. He looked terrified. Holding a toolbox in one hand and a shotgun in the other, he inspected the small hole in the front window. Sweat poured down the sides of his face, his dark skin glistening. Maisie panted at his side, swishing her black pom-pom tail on the floor. I gazed around the shop, attempting to clear my head and keep myself calm. My eyes landed on the bullet hole in the wall on the opposite side of the room, just inches away from the dog clock. According to the small hand pointing at the beagle and the big hand near the St. Bernard, it was almost 1 o'clock. I reached up and found my locket. As I vaguely recall those last few seconds before I hit the ground, a man ran out of the bank, dressed all in black. Except for the black sunglasses, he'd reminded me of an old school bank robber from an old black and white film. And then he aimed his gun at me. My lips tingled, and my vision blurred. I felt myself sinking, and I slowly lowered myself to the linoleum floor. The last thing I recalled was gulping huge intakes of air, and then blackness.
Steely.
I opened my eyes.
You fainted again. Maybe we should call an ambulance.
Daniel slumped on the floor beside me, fanning my face. He offered me my inhaler. I drew in two puffs.
No. Ambulance.
I raked a hand through my hair, slowly sitting up. I stared at the rubber ducky band-aids on my knees. I'll be fine. Someone shot at me. No big deal, right? Why don't you go ahead and get Maisie to the back? I'm sure Mr. Peters is on a tight schedule. I'll wait right here for Nick.
I don't know, Steely. Maybe I should sit with you until he gets here.
Wild blue eyes blinked at me. I'll be all right, I promise. I have Cuff and Mr. Peters out here. Go on. It'll be okay. With a few huffs and puffs and a great deal of reluctance, Daniel dragged Maisie toward the washroom. I leaned against the lobby chair behind me. Could this day get any worse? Cuff licked my hand.
You're still on the floor, Chiquita.
He panted, nodding over at Mr. Peters.
Maybe you should get up.
Mr. Peters watched me struggle to stand, without an offer to assist me. In the short time I'd known him since I'd taken over the shop, he seemed to hold a grudge against me. I assumed it had something to do with his relationship with my grandmother. It had soured over the years. I limped over to the front counter and planted myself on a stool. Mr. Peters stood like a statue at the window.
"This town is going to hell in a handbasket," he said.
"You can say that again, Mr. Peters."
Cuff hopped up on one of the lobby chairs and peered out the window alongside Mr. Peters.
"I bet if they let me sniff around, I can track down the bank robber. I am sure of it. But nobody listens to a chihuahua."
He jumped down and stretched out onto the floor, resting his muzzle between his front paws.
"First a murder, now a bank robbery and a shooting?" Mr. Peters turned and shuffled across the waiting room. "Guess I'll install that new lock on the back door of yours."
"Mr. Peters?"
"Yes, Miss Steely?"
"Did you see anything suspicious last night? You know, regarding Samson's murder?"
He grimaced. "I don't know what you're talking about."
"Well, I saw you walking down the sidewalk, and I heard that you and Samson hadn't been getting along."
"Well, you're mistaken. Now, if you don't mind, little Miss Busy Bee, I have work to do," he said, and hurried down the hall with Patrice, his shotgun slung across his back.
Busy Bee? Well, I've been called worse, I thought. I wondered why he denied being here, though. My suspicions of Mr. Peters knowing or seeing something last night grew. I had exactly 10 minutes until Nick arrived. Two squad cars had arrived and parked in front of the bank. They'd be busy dealing with the bank staff, taking their statements for a while. And until we reported it, nobody would know someone had shot at me. I snuck to the door leading up to the apartment. I peeked back toward the lobby, making sure Cuff didn't hear me. In a deep doggy snooze, he'd positioned himself in the front of the row of chairs to catch the sun streaming in the large lobby window. He'd rolled over onto his back, all fours in the air, head slumped to the side. A soft snoring rattle issued from his muzzle. I avoided pulling down the yellow caution tape and slipped through the door. I left it cracked open so I could hear the front doorbell if anyone arrived. As I climbed the stairs, I noticed a clump of black hair, flecked with silver, stuck in the crevice between the wooden steps. I picked it up gingerly and darted up the stairs for the baggie. Surely there was one in the kitchen somewhere. I'd get it to Kolbeski's lab later. Probably canine fur from downstairs, but one could never be too sure. After sealing the hair sample in a snack-sized baggie, I slid it into the front pocket of my shorts. I canvassed the floor. Nothing.
It appeared that they did a thorough job cleaning up last night. I crossed the room to the windows and studied the tacked front page of the banner. The paper had yellowed and the once black ink had faded to an ash gray. My fingers trembled as they grazed over the print. There had to be some kind of clue here, but what? It appeared to be an ordinary page from the Buckleville Banner. Recent gas price increases, local weather, a county fair article, miscellaneous pictures from the fair cook-off. Gertie had entered that year. She was in a photo, along with the Shermacks standing in front of their bakery. Oh, and there was Mama in her apron with her blue ribbon. I'd forgotten that she'd entered a dish that year, too. My eyes filled with tears. I fumbled with my locket and turned to observe the surrounding room, looking for any other evidence. I tried to channel her intuition, to find out what had happened to Virgil. I had to first discover who killed Samson. I'd put money on the fact that whoever did it had the dog. I checked the time on my cell phone. I had 6 minutes until Nick arrived. I needed to hurry. I peered out the window overlooking the street. It was the most perfect view of the front of the bank. Police scuttled about down below. The front of the bank. Oh my gosh, that's it! I know why the killer had been up here. He was scoping out the bank. That must have meant the bank robber and the killer were partners, or possibly even the same person. Something rustled behind me. I turned and nearly toppled over from fright. The scruffy guy Mr. Peters had been arguing with earlier bulldozed out of a small closet near the stairs. In a flash, he disappeared into the stairwell, a musical clanking trailing behind him. My lungs tightened, my pulse sped up. I squatted as if it seemed to help ease my breathing and stuck my head between my knees to keep from hyperventilating. Breathe, Steely, nice and slow, and then you get the heck out of here.
That would be wise, unless you have a confession to make.
I knew the voice without even looking up. I hadn't heard him approach. I lifted my head, slowly meeting those dark, dangerous eyes. Where's a paper bag when I need one? He took my breath away. Literally. I heard something up here, so I ran up to see what it was. And I don't know what you want me to confess. I didn't hurt anyone. I rested my head against the wall. And there was this man, a scraggly guy. He had something strapped across the front of him. A gun, maybe? Take a breath, Steely, start over. Look, Officer Jackson. I've had a rough day. Someone tried to kill me, and maybe it was the guy who fled out of here just now. But maybe he had something to do with the murdering Samson. I saw him arguing with Mr. Peters outside. And you don't know this because you're not from around here, but Peters and Samson were good friends. Maybe Mr. Peters knows this scruffy guy killed Samson. Or maybe Peters will go all vigilante and plans on taking out the scruffy guy with Patrice. Remember, that's what he calls a shotgun. I sounded like a rambling idiot, but I couldn't help it. Wait, who tried to kill you? The officer raised an eyebrow. And who'd been arguing? You've lost me.
Samson and Mr. Peters. Can't you keep up? I snapped.
Widening his stance, the left side of his mouth twitched as if he was attempting to fight back a grin. He must have gone on duty after we saw him at lunch because he now wore his officer's uniform, and he wore it well.
Well, that's quite the story.
He glanced about the room, resting a hand on the gun strapped in his holster on his belt. The other he slid into the front pocket of his black trousers, calm and cool. His eyes came to rest on me as he drummed his fingers on the handle of his weapon for what seemed like an hour.
Well?
I said, my pulse ticking up several notches.
Well, except for those bandaged knees, you look unscathed, Miss Lamar. I don't know about all those other things you mentioned, but I'm 100% sure the man who ran down the stairs was not out to harm you or anyone else. A banjo doesn't shoot bullets.
I narrowed my eyes.
But did you see him?
I said I did. Are you confused? Do you feel okay? His tight jaw relaxed, and his hard expression softened a little. Maybe you should get that bump on your head checked out. You could have a slight concussion. He sauntered over and offered me his hand. I'm fine. Ignoring his hand, I wrestled to my feet and tried slipping past him. Jackson sidestepped and stood like a brick wall directly in my path. Will you move out of my way, please? He smirked down at me, his dark eyes shining. Perspiration beaded on his forehead, and I itched to wipe it away. Good golly, what's my problem? Please? My voice squeaked. He didn't budge. He stood there holding me captive with those arresting eyes. Heat radiated from his body. It was a wonder he didn't burst into flames right there in front of me. I fanned myself. Gosh, it's like really hot in here. I can't breathe. I know it's not proper for a lady to sweat, and I'd like to say that I wasn't sweating, but I couldn't ignore the drips of perspiration hightailing it down my backside. Well, I guess everything's fine up here, and I'm guessing the man had a banjo, not a gun, hence the musical clatter I heard when he fled down. So I'll just be going now. I tried pushing past Jackson. Hold still. He brushed something from my hair. I flinched. A cobweb, he said, grinning down at me like the big bad wolf. I smelled the clean linen scent of dryer sheets and warm cinnamon. Miss Lamar, if you'd like to stay off my radar, please refrain from interfering with the crime investigation. Can you do that? I leaned against the wall behind me to keep from collapsing from the sudden onset of dizziness. If I didn't get a handle on it soon, my knees would buckle, and I'd wind up flat on my butt. I took a deep breath. Yes, and thank you. For getting the cobweb, I mean. I raked a hand through my hair. Now, do you want to tell me about someone trying to kill you today? He asked. The bank robber shot at me before he left the scene. I pushed away from the wall and ducked under his arm. And just before I dashed down the stairs, I turned to him. And I am begging you, Jackson, please don't tell Nick that I was up here again. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Are you curious about what happens next? Be sure to hit subscribe and tune in next Tuesday to find out. If you're enjoying the Cat Clayton Mysteries podcast, I would appreciate if you would rate and review so that other listeners can discover the podcast as well. Thank you for listening. Until next week, stay happy and sleuth on, my friends.